Governor Hochul toured areas of Long Island's North Shore that were hit by last week's heavy rainfall. She visited Stony Brook, where flooding burst through the dam at Mill Pond. She says homeowners may be eligible for grants of up to $50,000 to fund or reimburse repairs that are not covered by insurance through the state's Homes and Community Renewal Program.
Every dollar matters when they're trying to figure out how am I going to pay someone to take the mold out of my basement so there's no further damage.
Dorm buildings and infrastructure at Stony Brook University also were flooded. The state is seeking additional federal aid to help cover the $22 million cost to rebuild. You're listening to After All Things, WSHU's daily news and culture update from the Long Island Sound region. Connecticut Republicans continue to push for a special session on electric bills. New York sees a surge in hate crimes. Connecticut makes a move to help paraeducators with the cost of health care. And state environmental officials assess the impact of historic flooding on local wildlife. Those stories and more are coming up. I'm Sabrina Garone. Connecticut Republicans are again asking the governor to call the legislature into special session to deal with rising electric rates. WSHU's Molly Ingram has more.
July bills from Eversource and United Illuminating took many Connecticut residents by surprise, specifically the public benefits charge, which had skyrocketed. Senate Minority Leader Stephen Harding says Governor Ned Lamont hasn't been in contact with Republicans enough to talk about the issue. On Tuesday morning, Harding says the governor agreed to meet with legislative leaders, but stopped short of calling a special session. Harding called the response a half measure.
Every single Republican senator and Republican representative that has signed a petition to go into special session and to address this issue, to provide immediate relief to the ratepayers of our state, and also long-term relief that's going to finally stop the bleeding.
Republicans want to remove the public benefit charge from ratepayer bills. They also want to stop the increase scheduled for September. The extra money would be used to install new electric vehicle chargers. Molly Ingram, WSHU News.
New York State is reporting a major uptick in hate crimes in the last 5 years. WSHU's Shelley Hessman-Kadish reports.
A state controller report shows the number of reported hate crime incidents more than doubling between 2018 and 2023. The report says the actual number may be higher, as many times victims don't report incidents to law enforcement. The report also found that in 2023, nearly half of all recorded hate crimes and almost 90% of religious-based hate crimes targeted Jewish victims, the largest share of all such crimes. Hate crimes against Muslim New Yorkers rose by 106%. The share of racially motivated incidents and anti-LGBTQ bias crimes are also significantly greater than they were 5 years ago. State Controller Thomas DiNapoli's report notes state and federal proposals to help prevent hate crimes center around education, mental health services, and online safety. Shelley Hassman-Kadish, WSHU News.
Connecticut will expand an existing program that offers subsidies to help cover health care costs of paraeducators. WSHU's Janice Roman has more.
The program was signed into law last year as part of the biannual budget. It provides for more than 4,000 paraeducators. State Comptroller Sean Scanlon says the rising cost of health care is a contributing factor for a paraeducator shortage in Connecticut.
We figured out what we could do to solve what was a very big problem, which was how do we make sure that these paras can stay in the class, stay healthy, and continue meeting the needs of our Connecticut schools.
Scanlon says the financial assistance would not only help current paraeducators, but also attract new people to apply for the role. Janice Roman, WSHU News.
Historic flooding in Connecticut last week destroyed homes, businesses, and roads, but it also displaced local wildlife. More on that is coming up in just a bit.
Local support for After All Things comes from Hartford Healthcare, the only health system in the Northeast with all its hospitals receiving A grades for safety from the Leapfrog Group, the nation's leading independent safety watchdog group, HartfordHealthcare.org.
Eversource and United Illuminating customers may be targeted by a new scam, according to the Department of Consumer Protection. Scammers are offering elderly customers fake discounts on their bills. The DCP says customers should hang up on unsolicited phone calls from anyone claiming to be an employee of either company. A Hicksville man is the first person to be arrested for violating Nassau County's mask ban. Police charged him with a misdemeanor for carrying a 14-inch knife and wearing a mask that obscured his face. The newly installed ban has been a little controversial in Nassau. Some advocates say they worry it violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. The ban does not apply to face coverings for religious or health reasons. Demonstrations have resumed at UConn with the new school year as protesters call on the school to divest from companies tied to Israel over its war in Gaza. Organizers say they're planning demonstrations to support dozens of student protesters arrested last spring at UConn, Yale, and Wesleyan. Protests are planned for Middletown and New Haven Superior Courts. Historic flooding in Connecticut last week destroyed homes, businesses, and roads, and several people lost their lives. And now state environmental officials are assessing the impact on local wildlife. I spoke with Jenny Dixon, director of the State Department of Energy and Environmental Protection's Wildlife Division. Tell me a little bit about the day-to-day. What does that look like for you and your team since all of this flooding?
Well, you know, we've certainly had a lot of activity in a lot of different ways. A lot of it was assessing initial damage, seeing if people could still get to our wildlife management areas, if there were, you know, damage incidents and things that we needed to think about from a public safety standpoint. So that certainly comes first. And, you know, as an agency, obviously, we had a lot of issues with major recreational areas like state parks and things like that. For our wildlife management areas, luckily the damage was sort of contained to access related issues, at least as far as we know now, but some of those places we still haven't had a chance to do a thorough assessment on. So it may take us months before we have a chance to see, you know, what trees might have come down, what brooks might have washed out, that kind of thing. And the same is also true for a lot of our state forests because, you know, obviously they cover hundreds of acres in some cases, so it's going to be complicated getting a thorough assessment. So that's kind of an ongoing process over the next several months.
Were there any ongoing conservation projects that you guys were working on that have been disrupted by all of this?
We have a lot of different projects going on in different areas all the time. So that's part of what we're still assessing. The good thing in some regards about nature-based projects is they're resilient. So even though it might have taken, you know, taken us a step back for some of our habitat management projects, we can, you know, we can sort of pick up and start over again. It just means we're going to have to change our approach. Some of the challenges will be in areas where we've had major washouts of streams, brooks, crossings, things like that, where it'll take a while to put stream banks back together again, for example, or figure out how we're going to connect blocks of habitat again if they've been separated. So those are the more challenging things that are going to come over time.
Mm-hmm. And when I'm looking at like these photos and videos of the streams washing out, I'm thinking like, where did the fish go? Do you have any insight to that?
Well, the short answer is downstream. And I know that sounds like it's sort of an obvious answer, but that is absolutely what happens to some of the fish, to some of the things like turtles, some of the other amphibians that are stream-based, so frogs and things like that, that the velocity of the water is so fast that they can't swim against it. So it usually will move them downstream. How long it takes for them to be able to work their way sort of back upstream again, it depends a lot on whether there's any major obstructions for them getting from point A to point B. But that, you know, that is probably one of the groups where we see the biggest initial impacts is with things that live in the water, live around the water, and, you know, we're suddenly faced with that quickly rising water, not a lot of time to sort of get to higher ground for things like a turtle or a frog, and much greater likelihood that they're going to just get washed from point A to point B.
And what about the land mammals? Do downed trees and these road washouts impact them as well?
It's going to impact their movement patterns a little bit, so it may force them to move in directions through their territory that they might not otherwise have taken. So they might have to take a different route to get to their favorite place to graze if it's a deer. You know, they might have to pick a different route to go hunting if it's a fox or something like that. And in some cases, it may separate parts of their territory and make it a little bit more difficult for them to utilize what their normal territory would be. So they're going to have to make some shifts in how they adjust to that. And a little bit depends on, you know, sort of where their territory overlapped in terms of the storm damage. Because if it was a heavily impacted area, they're probably not going to be able to safely make some of those crossings that they made before. If it's a less impacted area, you know, maybe once the water goes down a little bit and flow rates subside, they might still be able to make those crossings. It'll just require a little bit more work. So it's going to change the shape and the shape of the territories and the movement patterns of some of those animals. I know that a number of our wildlife rehabilitators had also reported getting in initially a number of hawks and owls in particular that had been impacted by the storm and the winds and the intensity of the rain, and, you know, just sort of got drenched, for lack of a better way to put it, and just needed some time and a safe space to recover, dry out, get some food, and be ready to be released again. So that is something else that we saw for species we probably don't think too much about being impacted by weather events like this. One of the things that will take a little bit longer for us to assess is the impacts to species like freshwater mussels or other aquatic invertebrates that don't really have the ability to, you know, move quickly or far on their own. And if they got uprooted by the velocity of the water moving through, obviously, you know, that's going to be a challenging trip for them downstream, and they may not survive those kinds of sort of storm-related translocations. The other thing that can happen to them, if they're able to stay rooted in the bottom of the stream where they're sort of naturally occurring, they can get a layer of sediment that is then sort of deposited on top of them, and that can make things challenging for them, because if it's thick enough, they're not able to then, you know, filter food out of the water column like they normally would. So that can present some challenges in another way too. So for us, it's not just a matter of looking at the bigger things that are easy to see in the landscape. It's also thinking about what happened to some of those aquatic invertebrates, because those species are, you know, not only important from a wildlife perspective, but in many cases, they're also key food items for a lot of the other species in the system. So it's all part of seeing how the ecosystem balance was impacted and how that adjusts itself over time.
I was speaking there with Jenny Dixon from DEEP. For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio, stream online at WSHU.org, or download the WSHU app. After All Things is supported by Hartford HealthCare. And whether it's news, classical music, or podcasts like this one, it's all made possible with support from our listeners. So if you like what you hear, please consider making a donation to our station. All the info on how to do that is there for you on our website, including how to donate an old vehicle. I'm Sabrina Garone. Enjoy the rest of your day. I'll talk to you tomorrow.